A morning. Today's Av Menachas Kuf Zayin. We'll start today in the Mishnah Kuf Vav Amud Beis and more about the topic of making a neder regarding certain items towards the Beis Hamikdash and what exactly is going to be the base minimum that you are going to have to bring in order to satisfy your neder. We are on the 13th parak of Menachos, and this is it, the final stretch of the Masechta, in which... final stretch of the Masechta, in which we are in the 13th parak, and the Mishnayos over here wrap us up regarding just giving us basic definitions of how much you have to bring of what materials. Harei Alai Eitz, a person commits himself to bring wood. So he's going to be a supplier of wood. Wood, if you remember, we discussed this numerous times throughout the daf. So wood is wood was at a premium when building the second base of Mikdash. Building the second base of Mikdash, so there was not a lot of wood. Now, I don't know the history well enough to tell you why there was such a shortage of wood, but you needed donors. We're gonna see this again when we get back to Shkalim, but we needed donors during the second base of Mikdash, and everyone committed themselves to bring wood at certain times of the year. It's a Gemara in Shkalim. It's also the Gemara in Tanis. Anyway. So you commit yourself to bring wood. So you're going to have to now commit yourself to bringing two logs of wood. A log that's used for the Beit HaMikdash was square in shape. It was one amma by one amma. And you have to bring two of them. Lavona. Now, if you commit yourself to bring Lavona to the Beit HaMikdash, you want to offer Lavona in of itself. So, okay, that's great. So you have to bring now a kamitza of Lavona. It's a fistful of Lavona. Now, granted, kamitza is, generally speaking, not a standard shear, meaning, of course, it's going to be dependent on the size of the hand that's being held. But in other words, but still, it's a shear. We treat it like a shear throughout Shas, especially here in Menachos, where kamitza has taken the most air time. And so it's viewed as a shear. Chamisha kamitzim him. In fact, the Mishnah then digresses for just a moment to discuss how there are different kamitzas throughout the halacha. Number one, Ha'omer alai levona, lo yifchos mekametzah. The Gemara now repeats, the Mishnah repeats the halacha that we just learned together, but now we're enumerating the five different kametzahs that occur in halacha. So one, if you commit yourself to bringing a levona, so no less than one kametz worth of levona. Number two, ha'menadev mincha yavi ima kametz levona. If you're making a nidvas mincha, standard voluntary mincha, so kametz of levona have to come together with it. You remember we discussed already numerous times that what happens with the Lavona on a standard mincha is that after the mincha is prepared, you sprinkle the Lavona on top of it, and then you skim it right off the top and you burn on the Mizbech, and the Lavona is burned together with the chametz of the mincha itself. As we discussed earlier, the Masechta. For every standard mincha, you actually have two matirin. One matir being the Lavona, and the second matir being the chametz of the mincha. Number three, ha'malas ha'chametz b'chutz chayev. You take chometz and you offer it outside of the area of the Beis HaMikdash. So this is considered ha'alah b'chutz, offering something outside of the Beis HaMikdash, which is a serious penalty. It's a karis penalty. We know that generally when talking about ha'alah b'chutz, we talk about shchutei chutz and ha'alah b'chutz. Now, obviously, shchutei chutz is limited only to an animal. In other words, something which is shech to bull. Chometz obviously is not. So in other words, there's no isr of shchutei chutz as it relates to the chometz, but there certainly is an isr of ha'alah b'chutz. So offering outside the area of the Beis HaMikdash is subject to the curry's penalty. And finally, four and five is shnei bezichin. The two spoonfuls, together with the lechem upon him. So you have two spoonfuls of Lavona that are resting. Where are they resting? So we already saw numerous times a machlokus throughout our Masechta, whether they are resting on the top of the loaves, whether they are resting on the side of the loaves, if in fact there's any area left on the table for them. Okay.
Why is that four and five and not just four?
Hmm?
Why is that four and five and not just four?
Because we're just item. I know, but we're just counting.
Anyway, but I know what you're counting, but you're counting just one. So two, right?
I hear you. I know I got to get to the number five. that's my starting point. So that's why I do that. I mean, that's why it's four and five. So to unishtei kamatzim, so therefore you need two kamatzes. Hare alai zahav. We move on now. So basically, we're going from material to material. So we did the wood, we did the Lavona. And if we have a theme of the Mishnah, the theme of the Mishnah is basically organic material that are offered on the Mizbeach. Okay, not animals, not even the grains, but basically your organic materials. Now we're up to gold. Now gold obviously is not offered on the Mizbeach. But in other words, now as long as we're in the organic organic material and we're talking about things that come from the ground, so now we're going to cover all the minerals that come off the ground, you're going to be donating to the Beis HaMikdash. And again, now the question over here is if I commit myself to bring gold to the base of Mikdash, what am I on the hook for in terms of making a base minimum donation? So I realize Zahav. So I said I'm going to bring gold. So Lu Yivchos mi dinner Zahav. Okay, so no less than one dinner of gold. Let's say coin, significant coin. That's it. That's the base minimum. Kesef lo Yivchos mi dinner. Kesef, as far as silver is concerned. So the base minimum is a silver coin. The Gemara is going to ask the question. I'll preview it. The Gemara is going to ask regarding gold and silver. How do we know it's a coin? Meaning, could be that gold means a bar of gold. Silver can mean a piece of silver. How do we know it's coins? I'm foreshadowing. The Gemara is going to ask that question. Nechoshes lo yivchos mi ma'a kesef. As far as nechoshes is concerned, now my bronze and my copper, by the way, I always confuse. And iron, right? Iron also is coming up later this morning. So nechoshes copper, that right? That's accurate. Good. So nechoshes lo yivchos mi ma'a kesef. So no less than a ma'a kesef. Now ma'a kesef obviously silver. It means that a ma'a kesef is a silver coin of a particular weight, and that's how much nechoshes you have to bring. So let's say now you know that you made a specific pledge to the Beis Hamikdash of any one of the aforementioned minerals, gold, silver, copper, but your problem now is that shichacha. It's all of our problems. Every one of us. No one gets away with shichacha. A couple of people I could point to who do not seem to forget things, but generally speaking, it plagues all of us. So you forgot. You forgot exactly how much you dedicated. So yehemevi ad shiomer lekach niskavanti. So really interesting psak of the Mishnah, and that is give to basically it hurts. I'm not saying the Mishnah exactly accurately, but that's the basic idea, meaning that you know yourself pretty well. You know your basic portfolio, not basic. You know your portfolio. And so you know that when you make donations, so how much, what's your general range? So people know themselves. And so basically what you're going to have to now do is establish what your range is in terms of donation. You know you specified a number, so go to the high area of your particular range. So says the Mishnah in order for you to fulfill your neder. Tana Rabbanan, start with the Braisa. Karban Malamishim Niznadvim Eitzim. So carbon in the Torah seems to be superfluous, and it comes to include not just the standard mincha. By the way, this is the parak in the Torah that talks about mincha. Second parak, we've gone through it extensively throughout our masechta. So in addition to menachos being a carbon, you know what else could serve as a carbon? Eitzim. Eitzim could serve as a carbon. Malamishim is not even eitzim. V'kamash negazir. And how much? Two blocks of wood. V'cheinu omer. And this is the pasuk in Nehemiah that I alluded to earlier, describing how wood was at a premium during the building of the second base of Mikdash. V'hagorolos yiflinu al karban eitzim. And what we did is we had to take a lottery in order to determine who was going to be lucky, fortunate and unfortunate, by the way, because obviously it's going to be a financial commitment, but fortunate because you're offering to the base of Mikdash. So who's going to have the good luck of offering wood at what points during the year? Now, Rebbe Omer ate some carbon haim tuun and melech, utun and hagasha. Now, Rebbe says, now we're going to take wood and we're going to go all the way through in terms of looking at it as a carbon in of itself. Meaning, what you could have done is you could have looked at wood and said, okay, good. Wood goes up onto the Mizbech. Do you know what it serves on the Mizbech? It's fuel on the Mizbech to burn other carbonos. But the wood itself is not a carbon per se. It just simply facilitates the carbonos to go onto the Mizbech. And now what Rebbe's going is one step further. No. If wood is being offered in of itself, we're going to treat it for all intents and purposes as a carbon. And here's where it gets interesting. So first of all, it requires salt. That's great. Every carbon requires salt. Everything going onto the Mizbech requires salt. And tune in Hagasha, and also there's a Hagasha requirement, which basically means that we're treating it like a mincha. Okay, even though obviously it's a piece of wood, it's not edible, but I see it. Meaning, we're talking about something that grows out of the ground, it's organic and grows out of the ground, so it's more vegetable than it is mineral, although inedible. So okay, fine. So it's going to require Hagasha just like a mincha. Amar Rav Divrei Rebbe ate some tune in kemitza. And here we get to the fun part. And that is you're going to do kemitza with a block of wood. Okay, I have this great picture of somebody who's mastered the arts of kung fu and karate, taking his hand and chopping it through the wood in order so that he could do a kemitza. Perhaps I'm being a little hyperbolic in my description of kemitza with a block of wood. In fact, I am. Take a look at Rashi, second wide line of Rashi. Eitzim tunun kemitza, shemeraskan la'eitzim dakim achenoto mehem melokumso. So basically what you do is you grind it up into sawdust in order to be able to do kemitza to the wood. Amar Apapala Divar Rebbe Eitzim Srichim Eitzim. And here we get to the logical conclusion of this road, and that is, okay, good. So now you're bringing wood up onto the Mizbech as a carbon, meaning we're treating the wood as a mincha per se. And with all the halachas of a mincha, like we just described, Dagasha, Kibitza, Malicha, good. And on top of that now, also, we need wood. Right. In other words, we need wood for the wood. Meaning, if you're going to be offering wood as a mincha, so what goes under any mincha? So wood, in order for it to burn. So the wood requires wood. Now, I know it can end up into an endless loop, but that's the only time that wood has to be brought up in this manner is if you're donating wood in of itself.
You have to bring
Nesachim too. No, mincha doesn't have Nesachim accompany it. And we're treating the wood like Nesachim, so no. It would just, no, not Nesachim. Levana Leivchos Min HaKometz. Lavona does not require less than a kamitza. So, minal dechsev erimimene bekumso misolse mincha mishamna ve'eskol ha-lavona. There is no clear directive in the Torah that lavona is a kometz amount. In fact, there is no amount in the Torah mentioned regarding the lavona. The Torah just simply says, and there's lavona. So how do we know it's a kometz? So we're going to go with one of our classic ways of darshaning, and that is hekesh. Lavona is found in the same pasuk regarding the kamitza of the mincha. Okay, good. So there is a shear in the pasuk. Now, granted, the shear in the pasuk is regarding the mincha itself, but we're going to take that shear and we're going to now just simply extend it to the lavona. Mekesh lavona la rama de mincha. Maha rama de mincha kometz af lavona nami kometz. Good. So it's what we call a hekesh. Tanu rabbanan hare ala lemizbech yavi lavona shein lecha davar shekarav lemizbech el lavona. Let's say the person makes the following declaration. I'm going to be offering something. It does not clarify what that is. That is going to be offered exclusively on the Mizbeach, and no part of it is off the Mizbeach. And interestingly enough, the only thing that really qualifies as an item that goes exclusively up onto the Mizbeach is Lavona. And now, just in your mind now, shuffle through all the other things that you think go exclusively on the Mizbeach. And the Gemara, as we're going to see in the Gemara in just a moment, so we're going to see that that's not accurate. So I see the mind working. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara is going to go through a number of items that may qualify as this, but Lavona is really the only answer. Pirashi v'ani yodea ma pirashi. This is still the Braisa. The Braisa describes how a person specified, but he doesn't remember what he specified. Yavi mikol davar shekarav lemizbeach. So now he knows that he specified an item. He forgot what it is that he specified. So he's got to now offer all the things that normally go up onto the Mizbech. Okay. Ad kan divrei ha-braisa. The Gemara is really more interested right now with the first half of the Braisa. The things that are exclusively brought onto the Mizbech. Vesu leka. And you mean to tell me that Lavona is the only thing that goes exclusively on the Mizbech? I got a whole slew of things, says the Gemara, that I think qualify. Number one, va'ika ola. So isn't there the carbon ola? The Gemara says, no, ika ola le-kohanim. No. Meaning yes, but no. Most of a carbon ola goes up onto the mizbeach. In fact, the definition of a carbon ola is that it's offered kula la mizbeach. But that's not totally accurate. Because what happens before the ola is sent onto the mizbeach is we had hefshet. So what we do is we flay the animal, we remove the hide off the animal. The hide then in turn is given to the kohanim. Kohanim now have all this leather to work with. New shoes, a purse for the wife. In other words, it belongs to the kohanim. So it's not kul ola mizbeach. Let's try again. So the Gemara says, vayika ola sof. So the ola bird. Because the ola bird, there's no flaying of the ola bird. And the ola bird, in fact, in its entirety, goes up onto the mizbeach. So isn't that qualifying? The Gemara says, once again, yes, but no. Not exactly. So because the Gemara says, hayika mora venotza. Because of every ola bird, there is a section of the bird which is taken off, the crop of the bird, together with the feathers that are in the front of the chest, that are opposite the crop, and that area is removed, and that area is not burnt on the Mizbech. Where is that deposited? So if you recall, we've done this toss a number of times, where we tossed it to the eastern side of the ramp, and it's deposited with the same area where the Trumas HaDeshen is deposited on a morning basis. Rashi over here reminds us the Gemara in Yuma, to you can take a look at the top Rashi on the Amun, it's Rakhine Tzom Mizbech. The Gemara in Yuma describes how, isn't there going to be a collection of crop and feathers over there? it sinks into the ground. It's swallowed by the ground. One of the miracles of the Beit HaMikdash. Vayikra Nesachim, they're back to the Gemara, top line of Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. So what about the Nesachim? Nesachim are burnt entirely on the Mizbeach. So they should qualify, right? The Gemara says no. Lashita Nazla. Right now we're just talking about the wine component of the Nesachim, and it's not burnt on the Mizbeach. It's ascended to the top of the Mizbeach, but then it's poured on the southwest corner where you have the pipes that are leading down subterranean, and they're poured down the Shisin. So no, they don't qualify because it's not burned on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Vayika Minchas Nesachim. What about Minchas Nesachim? The other component of the Nesachim, notably the flour and the oil, mixed together and in its entirety taken the Mizbeach and burnt on the top of the Mizbeach. And so here, it seems like we have checkmate. Sounds like we have something else that qualifies as kulo lemizbeach. But even here, the Gemara protests. The Gemara says, no. Kevin de'ika mincha de'achle kohanim mina lo psikalei. So the Gemara says, no, because minchas nesachim falls within the category of menachos. Now, an interesting line of the Gemara over here, because if you remember, just yesterday and the day before, right, we talked about notable differences. Yeah, yesterday's daf. Right, Kuvav Amaral. We talked about notable differences that exist between the Minchas Nesachim and your standard Mincha. And we noted in yesterday's daf that if a person pledges to bring a Mincha, and he specifies, you know, I refer to one of the Minachos, but I forgot which one. So he has to bring all five, because it could have been all five. And the Gemara asked a question yesterday, what about number six? And that is Minchas Nesachim. And the Gemara says, not Minchas Nesachim, it's the oddball of the family. Now, you'll forgive me for using that language, but basically that's what the Gemara said yesterday. In other words, it doesn't behave like the other menachos. So it's interesting over here. Well, Minchas Nesachim is part of the family of menachos, and you know when it comes to a mincha, so by standard mincha, only a small fraction of it goes onto the mizbeach, and the rest of it are consumed by the kohanim. So that's why we couldn't mention Minchas Nesachim, meaning nothing changed. Minchas Nesachim is burnt on the mizbeach in total. That part's true. But the reason why it's not mentioned is because it's part of the Mincha family. Okay? What's it called? Competing Gemaras in terms of whether Minchas Nesachim is part of the family or not part of the family. Continuing in the Gemara. Gold, the Dilma Nascha, and the Gemara which I foreshadowed. Why don't we just simply say it's gold, meaning a piece of gold, right? Gold bar. How do I know it's a gold coin? So Amar Avelazad, Amar Matbeah. Simple answer of the Gemara, he said coin. He said gold coin. So the Gemara says, Vidilma Priti, okay, but a dinar? Dinar is a significant coin. How about a smaller coin? Amara Papa Priti, did the Havala of the Inshi? No, that's not how gold is made into coins. When golds are minted into coins, being that it is a serious commodity, so it's only minted into serious coins of a dinar, not little coins, what the Gemara describes as prutos. Kesef lo yifchos mi dinar. Silver, once again, no less than a silver coin. Same question. Yeah. Same question. Vidal Manascha. Maybe it's a piece of silver. Amar Rebbe Lazar, da Amar Matbeya. So again, the answer is he said coin. Vidal Mapriti. Now again, small coin. So Amar Rav Sheshes Basar de Losage Priti de Kaspa. The Mishnah is talking about a location in which small silver coins were not manufactured, were not minted. So therefore, when you're talking about a silver coin, so the default silver coin of that particular community that the Mishnah was describing was a dinar silver coin. Sounds like from the Gemara's answer that if the standard silver coin was smaller, so we would use a standard silver coin if he didn't clarify. What about copper? So copper no less than ma'a kesef, as I explained already back in the Mishnah. That is a particular weight of coin. And so therefore, you're taking the silver ma'a, its weight, and that's how much copper you bring. Tanya Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer lo yifchos mitzunura ketana shel nechoshes. Now, apparently, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov is arguing. Now, the Gemara doesn't frame it that way, but he does seem to be giving a different opinion. And that is, if you said copper, so and you didn't specify how much, it's going to be the smallest copper keli that's used in the Beis HaMikdash. So lo yifchos mitzunura ketana shel nechoshes. It's a small copper fork. Lamai chazya, and used for what? So it's used in order to clean off the wicks after a night of burning. So the wick's top is now basically charcoaled. It's been charred. So that's going to get cleaned off. And also, the lamps themselves are going to be cleaned with the small fork. The main menorah, so not clear. And Tosfos over here says that if we're talking about the main menorah, so we have another utensil, which we already described earlier, that's used for the cleaning of the neiros. Okay, so, but the point is that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it's the small fork that's used in the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. Nechoshes apparently was not used for minting. That's, in other words, silver was used and gold was used. Okay. I could be wrong, but prutos were made out of copper. Right. Okay. Barzel. We are now up to iron. Okay. Now iron was not discussed in our Mishnah, so the Gemara is going to quote a brisa. Tanya Chirim Omen Loivchos Mikalya Oref. So, in terms of the iron is concerned, so how much iron should you be giving to the Beis Hamikdash? Again, the context over here is that you made a donation to the Beis Hamikdash. You said that you're going to give iron to the Beis Hamikdash. So, how much is a minimum in order to fulfill your obligation? Enough for the Kalya Oref. Vikama, I will describe that in just a moment. Vikama, how much is that? I'm Rav Yosef Amma Amma. So it is one amma by one amma. Ikad amma lo yufchos me amma al amma. So the Gemara is going to present the same information, just a little bit inverted. So we start off with a measurement of an amma by an amma. L'machazi amma Rav Yosef l'kalya orev, and it's good for the kalya orev. What is the kalya orev? So I'm happy you asked. So Rashi says that the kalya orev was a structure that's put on the very top of the Beis HaMikdash, and what it does is that it deters birds from landing and sitting on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi says, you can see the Rashi inside. Rashi's towards the top of the Amud, Kalya Orev. Mas Meros Chadin, sharp nails. Tochvin Berosh Gag, Ha'echol Kalos, Ha'orvin Shelo Yashu Alehem, Shelo Yashu Alav. So basically, these spikes are now placed on the very top of the Beis HaMikdash so that the ravens don't have any place to perch themselves on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. More on the Kalya Orev. Tosos over here also comments on the Kalya Orev. And Tosos writes. So first he quotes Rashi, and I'm going to skip a couple lines in Tosfos for the sake of brevity. So a similar idea, but instead of spikes, he describes it as basically a sharp edge that's placed on the very top of the Beis HaMikdash. And perhaps a strange image that I could put in your minds this morning is basically a scarecrow on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. The Aruch says so, and Tosfos quotes the Aruch. He says that basically some sort of image was placed on the Beis HaMikdash in order to scare away the Ophos that was placed on the top. And, you know, you go to the fields nowadays, says Rashi, meaning Rashi is writing circa 12th century. You know, you go out to the fields nowadays and you'll see scarecrows out in the field. So basically there was a scarecrow on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. And so now this lends itself to the next part of Tosfos's discussion. And really interesting, did you need one? In other words, we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash over here, a Shechina. And a bird is now going to just be perched and sitting on the top of an edifice that is the bais of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the Od Pirush Baruch Mikdash Rishon Sheshchina Shuriyabo Lo Hayutzrichin Kalya Orev. So Tosfos continues quoting the Aruch. This was not necessary for the first Beis HaMikdash. Shelo Hein Ofos Porchin Alav. In other words, where the Shechina was so strong and so powerful, so there were no birds flying over. So there was just simply no need for it. Ava Mikdashini Shlo Aisa Kedushas Oki Kedushas Rishon Hutzrichu LaKalya Orev. This was only necessary for the second Beis HaMikdash, where you did not have as strong a presence of the Shechina in Bayis Sheni. So says Tosfos. Really interesting. Tosfos goes on, by the way, describing that maybe they tried it out in the first Beis HaMikdash, but anyway, a lot of good information regarding the Kalya Orev. We continue now in the Mishnah. We are in the middle of Kuv Zayin at Aleph. Harela Yayin Lo Yichos Mishlosh Lugin. So you commit yourself to bringing wine, no less than 3 lug of wine, says the Mishnah. Shemen Lo Yichos Milug. Now, if you're going to donate oil in of itself to be brought onto the Mizbeach, now you'll remember just a couple days ago, so we had a machlokus whether or not oil could be brought in of itself. And this takes us back to a Mishnah not that long ago. Back on Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. So Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, the last Mishnah of the 12th Perek of Menachos, had a machlokus between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Kiva was of the opinion that Shemen cannot be offered independently. And Rabbi Tarfon says it can be. So our Mishnah over here is following like the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Okay. And it's not my observation. Rashi says it. Rashi says it on the Mishnah. Hare alai, Shemen. Shemen lo yivchos milug. So Rabbi Omer shlosh lugin. So what we have over here is a machlokus tanaim in terms of how much oil you need to bring. Either one lug or three lugin. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain the machlokus. Perashi bi'on eni odea ma perashti. Now the person over here committed to bringing a certain amount, but does not remember how much he committed himself to. So yavi kiyom meruba. So you're going to have to bring equivalent to the maximum that's brought on one particular day. Now, if you've been around in the daf recently, you'll know what that one day is. If not, we're going to review it in just a little bit. Tana Rabbanan, we are continuing now in the Gemara. Ezrach, the Psukim by Nesachim, Parsha Shlach. So we have a Pasuk which we've quoted already numerous times. In this Pasuk, it seems to be extraneous, and the Gemara now is darshaning. Ezrach Melamishim is not vinyayin. A person can offer wine as a stand-alone carbon to the Mizbeach. The Kamashol Shalugin, and it is an amount of three lugin, minayin she'im ratzal osif yosif, tamalamer yiyah. And at the same time, three lugin is just a base minimum. You can offer more if you want. Yachol yivchos tamalamer kacha. But you can't offer less. Three lugin is the base minimum. Shemen lo yivchos min alog Rebbe Omer shol shalugin b'may kemiflugi. So what is the debate between Rebbe and the Tanakama in terms of what is the minimum amount of oil that is going to be offered if the oil is going to be offered as a standalone carbon? So Amrim Rabbanan Kamei Rapapa Bedomina Mina Bedomina Veuka Basra Kemiflugi. And so what the Gemara boils this down to is a machlokus that we've seen numerous times throughout Shas, and that is the idea of when I make a gzera shava, bringing a halacha from area A to area B. So when I take a halacha from area A to area B, and the reason why this halacha is traveling is via gzera shava. So are we going to domina mina? Now domina mina means as follows: that we'll take the halacha from A, we'll bring it over to B, but we will not contextualize it in B. Meaning whatever its parameters and shape was in A, that's the way it's going to look in area B. That's domina mina. Or the other possibility is domina v'uka basra. When a halacha travels from A to B, so we bring it from A over to B, but we contextualize it. We put it in its proper context in B. Okay? That's the abstract understanding of the machlokus, and now we're going to see it in practice right over here. Rabbanan sefer domina mina, ma mincha misnadvin, ma avshem anami misnadvin. So when it comes to a mincha can be offered by itself, and so can oil. Umina, and let's go from there. Ma mincha belug, avshem and belug. Now when it meaning oil, is part of a standard mincha, so how much oil are we talking about? One lug. So now when oil is being offered in of itself, don't mina mina. Don't contextualize it. Yes, we're bringing it over to the parsha of Nesachim. And yes, the base minimum of Nesachim is three lugin, but that's fine. Don't mina umina tells me we don't contextualize it, and therefore it remains at one lug. Rabbi Sarva domina vuka basra. And Rabbi says no. In other words, we're going to take the halacha, bring it over, but then we're going to give it the proper context. Ma mincha misnadvin, rasha minamim misnadvin. Mincha can be offered by itself, so can shemen. V'uki ba'asra. But now we're going to put it, since we are extending it to the parsha of Nesachim, so now we have to give it the proper context. So v'uki ba'asra ki Nesachim, ha'Nesachim shlosha lugin, av shemen nami shlosha lugin. Now we know, when it comes to Nesachim, what is the minimum amount of oil for Nesachim? Three. So when oil is being brought by itself, how much is it going to be? Three. That is the first approach of the Gemara in terms of understanding the machlokus of base amounts, base minimum amount of freestanding oil. Amar lehu rapapa imi mincha gamala rabbi dekoli amalo pligi domina omina. If we're learning it from mincha, so what rapapa would like to argue is that everyone would agree to the principle of domina omina, meaning just take the halacha and bring it over without contextualizing. Ela rabbi mi ezrach gamir la. It happens to be that Rebbe doesn't learn it from Mincha, but rather learns it from the Parsha of Nesachim itself. It's not a Gzeira Shava where we're learning it from the Parsha of Mincha over to Nesachim, but we're learning it locally in the parsha of Nesachim. So Amalei Ravuna Bereider Rav Nasan Rav Papa Mi Masas Amar Hachi. Is that really plausible? I know that that's not the case. Vehatanya, because I have a brisa. Carbon malamishem is not v'shemen v'kama shoshalugin. So the brisa reads that the word carbon, that's mincha parsha, that's perik beis of Vayikra. So that teaches us that you bring oil. And how much? Shloshalugin. Now we can identify who the author of the brisa is because of the amount. Mansham alei damar shoshalugin Rebbe. Good. So we know the author of the brisa is Rebbe. V'kamaisi lami carbon. And he learns it from carbon. So amalei tanya tanya. So he says, okay, you have a brisa. I can't argue against a brisa. We move on. Perashi v'ene yodea ma perashi avi kiyom meruba tana kiyom tov rishon shechag shechalios b'shabbos. What is the day calendarically where the maximum amount of Nesachim are brought? First day of Sukkot that coincides with Shabbos. So without going into the numbers, I think the last time I also avoided going into the numbers. But it's not hard math. It's just simply addition. Take all the karbanos that are offered that day, all the Nesachim that accompany those karbanos that day, and it is a maximum number because we know on the first day of Sukkot that is the maximum number of parim. Parim on Sukkot differentiate daily, where the first day is 13, the next day is 12, and it goes all the way down to 7, and making a total of 70. The Gemara in Sukkah explains the significance of the number of 70, but anyway, the first day of Sukkot, you have the maximum number of Parim. And coupled with Shabbos, where now that means that you also have the Shabbos Musafim, so that is the day calendarically where you have the maximum number of Nesachim that's offered, and if you committed yourself to an amount and you forgot how much it is, so that you're gonna match that day.
Last time also, now also in Chofsa the Purim, what's with the Kavusim and all the things?
That's all part of it.
You meant everything.
Everything. Hakol. Okay. The Mishnah. Kuv Zayin Amud Aleph in the bottom of the Amud. Hare Alei Ola. So let's say you commit yourself to bring a carbon. Ola Yavi Kevis. So you bring a sheep. Now the sheep is the smallest of the animals. So isn't that interesting? That the Mishnah over here says that if you commit yourself to an ola, but you don't specify which carbon you could bring, so the Mishnah says you can bring a sheep. And there is a common theme throughout this Mishnah, which really articulated clearly by Tosfos. You could see the top Tosfos. Now this top Tosfos over here is going on the previous sugya, but the point is going to be basically the same. When you commit yourself to something to be brought onto the Mizbeach, and it is a category, so basically we look for the smallest of the category, right? You see the top Tosfos Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph V'Dilma Nascha Nir Denascha Pachos Midinar Dematfei Lo Kashele DeAzlin and Basar Apachos KeDeAmar Hare Alai Esronos Yavishnayim. In other words, Tosfos gives numerous examples to this idea that if you commit yourself to a category, so generally what we're looking to do is the smallest of the category. So we are minimalists in this regard. Okay, so the Mishnah over here says you bring Kevis. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Otur, or Ben Yonah. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, well, we can go smaller, meaning a carbon ola that's even smaller than Kevis. Sure, a bird. And I guess, I mean, the Gemara doesn't really spell out the machlokas over here, but I guess the counter-argument is, that's true, a bird is an ola, but he writes, it's a different category, it's a different species. In other words, when people say ola, I mean, right, it's hard for me to say what people mean because we don't have this kind of dialogue. You know, we're learning about it, but it's not part of our daily lives. So it's hard for me to say, but my guess would be that the Tanakhama would basically say, we're talking about animals. People talk about animals. Perashti, mina bakar ve'ini yodeh ma perashti. So I said something from the bakar family, but I don't remember what I said. So the now yavi par ve'egel. So now what you have to do is you have to bring par ve'egel. And basically the assumption that the Mishnah is making over here is that not only is there cattle, but within cattle, so there are different types of cattle basically differentiated by age. So in other words, when an animal gets to a certain age, it qualifies as an egel. When it gets older, it qualifies as a par. And basically it depends on whether it's a one-year-old, a two-year-old, a three-year-old. And when talking about ages of animal, right, we make this point numerous times. So when I say one-year-old, I'm meaning it's in its first year, right? A two-year-old is within its second year. So like, for example, the Karban Pesach. So we know the halachas by Karban Pesach, it has to be ben shana. So it has to be within its first year. So anywhere from 8 days old to its first year. Mina behema v'neyudeh ma'pirashti. So let's say you said the word behema, and you don't. And again, you know you specified an animal, but you forgot which one. So yavi parve egel, isle v'seir, gidi v'tzaleh. So in order to satisfy your neder now, so you got to bring a whole string of animals that all could have fallen under your neder of what you made because you knew you said one of the behemoth. Perashi v'ni yodeh ma perashti. So now, let's say you simply said the min, but you don't remember if you said behema. You don't even remember if you said oaf. So what do you do now? Mosif aleihem, as we continue to the top of the Amud Beis. Tor u'benyona. So now you got to bring Tor and Benyona. Hare alai toda v'shlamim. So if a person says that you're going to bring a toda or a shlamim, or I should say better, and a shlamim. I'm sorry, I was right the first time. Right, a toda or a shlamim. So you have a keves. So here, once again, of the category of toda or shlamim, so you can bring a sheep, and therefore you will. Pirashti mina bakar ve'eni yodeh ma pirashti. So you said mina bakar, but you don't know. So you have a para ego ve'egla. So here, you got to bring from one of the cattle, but here, because it's shlamim, so it could be either male or female, and therefore you have to bring both male and female. You see, by Ola, by the way, huh? I guess over here you said bakar. Yeah, no, I don't guess. Here you said bakar. Right? You said min bakar. Okay, parashi min bakar.
But you, when he said before, toy de shlomim.
No, because they, no, but there, no, there you didn't specify.
You're taking the smallest animal, but could have been either zuchar or an akeva, that small animal.
No, but there, I understand. But no, there, the case was not pirashti. There, the case was that you just committed yourself to a toda or a shlamim. So there, you didn't say pirashti. So in order to satisfy your neder, you only need to bring the smallest animal. The problems become when you say pirashti, where you know that you articulated one particular type of animal, but you forgot which one. So then you have to bring all these animals because they could all have been your neder. So yavi parparai govegla mina behema veini yodea ma pirashti. So now you know you specified a behema, but you forgot which one. And this is now a shlamim. So now let's go. Yavi parparai govegla ayo verechela siir siira gidiu gidiya tle utliya. Every possible animal under the sun. I don't really mean that. Literally meaning every possible animal that could be offered as a carbon, and also every age bracket, and every gender, male and female, because it's a shlamim. Hare alai shur. Let's say you commit yourself to bringing a shur. Yavi hu unesachav b'mana. Now, in terms of base amount payments, so this is interesting. So let's start off like this. An easier place to start. The Torah never gives us a price tag on a carbon. Meaning there is one carbon where the Torah gives us an amount that we must spend minimally, and that's a carbon asha. Interesting. I can't tell you why, but I can tell you the what. So by carbon asha, the Torah tells us that you have to be paying two shkalim for an asha, but after that, there's no price tag. In other words, the Torah never tells us how much to pay for an animal.
The reason was that Asham Tal, they didn't want people to take it lightly because Asham Tal, they want to
be. It could be. I don't remember. Your memory is good. So as far as any other carbon is concerned, so whatever it costs. So interesting over here that what the Mishnah is going to do is that the Mishnah is actually going to attach prices to your neder. Meaning we're talking about a person making a neder, and so for your neder, there is a base amount that you have to pay. Now, I say base amount, I may be wrong about that. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi over here says, as far as his pricing is concerned, kach nisparish, Rashi is the fourth line down from the top, kach nisparish dino b'tzor shebal peh. Really interesting line of Rashi. I could translate it. I'm not claiming I fully understand it, but in other words, Rashi says, this is part of tzor shebal peh. Again, I'm not sure exactly what that means. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and gave the prices, and what is that? Adjusted for inflation? Not adjusted for inflation? So I'm admitting that I know how to read the Rashi, I just don't fully understand it. But anyway, here comes the minimum. So for sure, so for it and its nesachim, it's a full money. Now, I know that's a lot of money. That I could say clearly. Egel yavihu nesachav bechamesh. So, and as far as an egel together with the nesachim, so that's going to be five. I assume it's five dinarim. Five salayim. Okay, but still significantly less than a mana. Ayel yavihu nesachav b'shtayim. So for that, it's going to be two salayim. A keves yavihu nesachav b'sela. So the sheep is one sela. By the way, it includes the nesachim. The price includes the nesachim. Shur b'mana yavi b'mana chutz minesachav. If let's say your declaration of neder was, I'm going to bring a shur and it's going to cost a mana, so that means to say that the shur by itself is going to be costing a mana, meaning because again, that's your neder. Your neder was that you're going to include the shur as the, I'm sorry, not include. The shur by itself is going to be the mana, and therefore that's how much it's going to cost, and that's going to exclude the nesachim. Ego b'chamish, yavi b'chamish, chutz minasachav. Ayel b'shtayim, yavi b'shtayim, chutz minasachav. Keves b'sela, yavi b'sela, chutz minasachav. And the list goes on and on. Meaning, if in your neder you just simply say that the animal itself is going to cost an amount, so that means now that that price does not include nesachim, that's going to be an extra. Shor b'mana v'hevi shnayim b'mana lo yasa. If, let's say, you now made a pledge that you're going to bring a shor b'mana, and what you did is that you brought two sharim. Each one of them was half of a mana, but look, I'm good, right? Because I brought two, even though individually they're not a mana, but collectively they are. So I'm good, and the Mishnah says, no, you're not. Lo yatsa. Ve'afilu zebe mana chaser dinor, ve'zebe mana chaser dinor. And look, even if each one of them is one mana minus a dinar, so I'm awfully close, and think about how much I just spent. I spent nearly two mana. Almost double of what I pledged I was going to bring. And once again, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. But again, it makes perfect sense. It's logical. Because your pledge was that you were going to bring one shor at the value of a mana. I guess you can, I'm sorry I think this way, but I guess you can ask the question, well, what if you overpay? Is that going to work? So, shachor vehevi lavan, lavan vehevi shachor. If let's say your neder was you were going to bring an animal that which was black, and you brought white. And your neder was you're going to bring white and you brought black. Lo yatsa. And if you pledge you're going to bring a large animal, you bring brought a small animal, you weren't yotze. Now colors are easily quantifiable. Large versus small, I don't know how that works in terms of quantifying it. But anyway, I guess back then it was understood. Katan vehevi gadol yatsa. Rebbe Omer lo yatsa. This line of the Mishnah we should remember because this takes us all the way back to yesterday's daf. So hopefully we remember. So in other words, the Mishnah over here says that if let's say you pledged to bring a small animal, and instead you brought a large animal. And so did you fulfill your neder? So interesting, the Chachamim said yes you did. Because yesh bechlal mana masayim. Let me say that better. Let me say it correctly. Yesh bechlal masayim mana. Okay, that's better. That's correct. So over here, so your pledge was to a small animal, but a large animal. And like I gave the example yesterday, you pledge you're going to make a donation to the show for $100. You walk in with a check for $200. So I don't think they're going to turn you away. They'll probably take the check. So the Chachamim, right, the Chachamim said same over here. And Rebbe says no. Rebbe says that as far as a neder is concerned, so no, it has to be the exact amount. You said katan, so it has to be katan. And again, I'm assuming that they knew what katan versus gadol meant. Let's do a little bit of Gemara this morning. Avlo pligi marki asrei and marki asrei. So the Gemara says, now the Gemara is going all the way back to the beginning. So the... So we are now going back to the very beginning of the Mishnah where we talked about the person committed himself to bringing an ola. Now again, what does that mean, ola? Does that mean smallest animal? Could it even mean a bird? And in the Mishnah, we had a machlokas. The Gemara, I give a pshat in the Mishnah. The Gemara is giving a different pshat in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, now there's no machlokas. Marki asrei. It's really a sociological issue. Meaning that in your community that you live in, when you say the word ola, is that understood as animals, or in your parlance, does Ola also communicate birds as well? And the Gemara says, and that's going to basically be the definition of neder.
Depends the word.
Right. By nedarim, we learn Masechet Nedarim, so you hear this a lot. So, right, so basically it follows Lashon B'nai Adam. In other words, what is the common understood spoken language? Okay. Tana Rabbana Harei Alai Ola B'Selel HaMizbeach Yavi Keves. If let's say you commit yourself to bringing an ola at the value of a sela. So there, so it's going to be a sheep, because that's the standard cost of a sheep, is that one stella. So shekar b'stella, peirashi v'yanidea ma peirashi. So let's say a person says that he articulated what he was going to bring, but he didn't say what it was going to be. Yavim yikolda v'shekar b'stella gabi mizbeach. So there, whatever a stella could buy you that can make its way to the top of the mizbeach, so that's what you're going to have to bring. So in other words, the large animals, which we already pointed out, its price tag was larger than a sella, which was basically every animal larger than a keves that we saw back in the Mishnah. So they're not going to be included in your neder. But smaller items, however, will be included in your neder. Perashi min abakar v'ni yodea ma perashi avi par ve'egal. Amai v'leisi par mi manavshach. So the Gemara says, now why not just simply bring a par? Why not just simply bring a par? So the Gemara says, hamani. In other words, and the idea is that isn't a par going to give you full coverage? Because a par is a large animal. And included in the par, you'll have the paro. And all the other animals as well. So hamani rebi hi damar katan vevi gadol lo yatsa. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'll tell you what. In other words, the author of that Mishnah, that segment of the Mishnah is Rebbe. Because remember what Rebbe said, you have to be exact. In other words, bringing an animal larger than what you pledged is not going to be acceptable. So the Gemara says, "I Rebbe em seifa shor b'mana ve'evi shnayim b'mana lo yatsa ve'afilu zeb b'mana chaser dinar ve'zeb b'mana chaser dinar shachar ve'evi lavan lavan ve'evi shachar gadol ve'evi katan lo yatsa katan ve'evi gadol yatsa Rebbe amar lo yatsa." So the Gemara says, so now consider how the Mishnah operated. You're telling me that line regarding the ola and the par, and the par is no good because you may not have said par, you may have said something smaller, and we don't say that the par is going to give you full coverage. So you're telling me that line of the Mishnah is going like Rebbe. And then look how choppy the Mishnah now becomes. So that line is going like Rebbe. Clearly the next segment of the Mishnah goes like the Chachamim. And then we're going to go back to Rebbe. So now, Reisha B'Sefer Rebbe, Mitzias Rabbanon. And that's how you're reading the Mishnah. And the Gemara basically with a shoulder shrug says, yes, that's right, in. Reisha B'Sefer Rebbe, Mitzias Rabbanon. That's how you're going to read the Mishnah. V'hachi kamar, davazeh machlokas Rebbe v'Rabbanon. Meaning, and the way the Mishnah the Mishnah presents itself is that in the beginning of the Mishnah, we weren't really that clear that it was a machlokas. So in other words, we're reading various segments of the Mishnah, and we're getting mixed results. Sometimes a large animal includes a small animal. Sometimes it doesn't. And then when we get to the end of the Mishnah, oh, now everything crystallizes. Because davrezeh machlokas, because now we understand that if I commit myself to bringing a certain animal, a certain size animal, and instead I go with a larger animal, is that good, yes or no? Oh, you know why the Mishnah has been giving us mixed signals? Because it's a machlokas between Rabbi and the Chachamim. Good. Stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up at the two dots.